The Pat Kenny Show
with MasterCard. Share in extraordinary experiences all over the world with priceless cities at priceless.com.
This is News Talk.
With those Brexit negotiations possibly reaching a culmination, all eyes are on Northern Ireland, which has yet again come centre stage in international relations. The Irish border, its hardness, its softness, its visibility, its invisibility, have ended up becoming the final sticking point in that tangled web that is Brexit. Now, to look at the origins and shape of the Irish border, I'm joined by UCD historian Dr. Conan Mulva to examine some research that he recently completed on the actual drawing of the Irish border and the way in which Irish nationalists were convinced as early as 1913 to accept in principle a time-limited exclusion of Ulster from the provisions of Home Rule, and how this time-limited exclusion of six Ulster counties evolved into the existence of a border that has remained in permanent existence since the foundation of the Northern Irish state in 1921. Conor, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
It's deja vu all over again, as
it is for a historian,
as the wags would say.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about a temporary transition period, a temporary backstop, and we had a temporary border.
It was very strange for me finishing up this. It's a journal article I've written for a French history journal, and finishing this up and listening to the news every morning, every evening, and hearing the temporary nature, hearing about the different provisions and the way that it's been negotiated.
Let's go back to the beginning, and who first proposed that the island of Ireland would in some way be partitioned?
So there's a Liberal MP from Cornwall, of all places, called Thomas Agar Robartes, and under the premise that I have never heard that orange bitters mix well with Irish whiskey, he moves an amendment in June of 1912 to exclude the four Protestant majority counties only of Ulster. And at the time, the Ulster Unionists are very much against this because they see it as a trap, that this has been set off early so that the Unionists and the other two counties that have slim Catholic majorities will, and it'll divide essentially the Unionist vote.
So this was the proposal. I mentioned in the introduction that some nationalist MPs were persuaded to actually favour this partition. Why?
Well, this is what I'm really interested in. And this is, I suppose, the part of this story that I've known for the longest time, that in the autumn into the winter of 1913, first of all, there's a massive UVF rally held in the end of September by Edward Carson, 12,000 members of the UVF, mostly unarmed, but lined up, and they unfurled the largest Union Jack ever seen in the history of the Empire, apparently to this day. And after this, the British government take fright, and they're getting really worried about the Ulster situation. They said, this is, you know, this isn't just bluster. This is a big threat we have against us. So they call in the leaders of Nationalist Ireland rather than the Carson, etc., and say, why did you have a big paramilitary rally outside of Belfast? And they say to John Redmond that we've intercepted 95,000 rounds of ammunition bound for Belfast. We have information that rifles are being stockpiled. Brilliant work done on this.
I mean, the hand they played was, we will rebel. If you try to bring home rule to the 32 counties, we will rebel.
Absolutely. And the thing about the winter of 1913 is that the British government turn around to the nationalist majority and say, we don't want a civil war. You don't want a civil war, which is very clear. And they say, OK, you guys are going to have to make a compromise because these guys are really showing their teeth and we're scared.
So it was to be a temporary little arrangement. That was the idea, that in to keep peace on the island, give these four counties, because it was four at the beginning, give them their head, let them have their own little arrangement. But it is only temporary.
And that's it. The concession that is elicited from three of the four leaders, the one excluded is the MP for West Belfast himself, is in November of 1913, three of them have said, yes, we'll agree to the principle of purely temporary exclusion.
And who was the fourth who wouldn't go along and who eventually did?
And that's what the whole Christmas into February of 1914 period is all about, is convincing this one MP, Joseph Devlin, to get behind this scheme.
Now, they weren't to know how long the Great War would last. I mean, it was the first shots had been fired at the end of 1914. They didn't know that the Easter Rising was ahead, although that kind of fomentation of rebellion was in the air. But no one was to know, because they were talking about Home Rule, which it actually wouldn't have mattered if we had got Home Rule. So you got one part that runs itself, but subservient to the Crown, and the other part which has its own little arrangement and is subservient to the Crown. Two parts of the island bowing to
Westminster. And in the peacetime of 1914, before the war breaks out, the whole thing here is that second home rule within home rule or a separate temporary exclusion or separate jurisdiction is purely temporary. And the nationalist leaders get behind this and they say, OK, it's a tactic we'll definitely countenance. If this comes down the road, we might not oppose it depending on the conditions.
Okay.
And as you've said, the conditions change radically.
So four counties became six. How?
So basically, once Joseph Devlin, the fourth member, agrees to this principle of concession, then they start getting the maps out. And what happens is Augustine Birrell, the Chief Secretary of Ireland, calls in three of his senior policy advisors. He calls in James B. Doherty, who's his undersecretary, the most senior civil servant for Ireland, W.F. Bailey, who's in the Estates Commissioner's Office as the head of that, and then Henry Augustus Robinson, who's the Vice President of the Irish Local Government Board. And he says to these three guys, sometime around March or April of 1914, get the maps out and draw me a border that makes sense. Give me a temporary area of exclusion.
Yeah. Each used his own methodology,
which is very interesting.
So let's talk about Bailey. What did Bailey do?
So Bailey, in some ways, is the most slapdash of the three schemes. But I think one of the most interesting things about the Bailey scheme, ultimately what he proposes is subdividing the border counties. All of them do to a certain extent, but Bailey is really interesting. On the eastern side of the border, he considers that South Armagh be left in the south. But on the western side of the border, around Fermanagh, the really interesting thing is that Bailey uses physical geography rather than current administrative decisions to make a very different looking border. He runs the border straight up the River Erne up to Pettigo.
Dividing the county,
but creating a border where a body of water stops one jurisdiction and begins the other. Remember, this is meant to be purely temporary, but my argument with Bailey is that he's creating something that's tangible, physical and identifiable. So there's a bit of permanency to it.
So what did Robinson do?
Well, maybe before we go on to Robinson, the strangest thing I find about the Bailey scheme is in Monaghan, where he says, you know, North Monaghan, and if you look at the border today, there's the big lump of Monaghan in the south. He just says, leave North Monaghan in the north, which, you know, is incredible to anyone listening in Monaghan today. You know, by the stroke of a pen, you avoided being on the wrong or right side of the border, depending on your political persuasion. The Robinson scheme, then, I think it's the most carefully thought out. Robinson's interesting because as Vice President of the Local Government Board, he had drawn all the local district councils. He had tweaked half of the county boundaries of Ireland in 1898 with the Local Government Act. So of anyone, I think he's probably the most skilled cartographer. As he said himself, I drew all the borders of Ireland, including the border, you know, and he sees this as being his thing. What he proposes, again, is that South Armagh and South Down, including Newry, be left in the south. And he sees that the sensitivities there. And then again, on the western side of the border, Enniskillen and Lisnaskee, and the fear of a contagion effect into Cavan and Monaghan mean that he says, leave Tyrone and Fermanagh entirely in the north. So he's tweaking that. And then he looks at Derry as well. The really interesting thing is the justifications, because he gives quite honest justifications. So about Cross MacLean nationalists, he said, they're about the warmest lot I know. So therefore, leave them with their co-religionists in the south. You'll have a headache on your hands if you leave them on the wrong side of the border.
And so it turned out.
I was just giving a lecture on the 1980s in Thatcher yesterday to my Northern Ireland students. And, you know, the idea of a North without Cross MacLean is a very different one if we think about the troubles.
And then the Doherty, what methodology did Doherty use?
So Doherty is the most senior of the three. He's the head of the Irish Civil Service. And his idea is that he doesn't want a headache for himself. So he basically says that it would be an administrative headache for us to cut up any of the current schemes. So let's leave the counties as they are and let's look at this on a county by county basis. And then the big question here, Doherty was a native of Garva in County Derry. And the big debate comes down to Derry itself. And he says, we can't have the maiden city removed from its parent county, despite the fact that Derry has a clear Catholic majority in the period. So he says Derry also has strong sentimental attractions to the Ulster Protestant. It's the headquarters of the county administration. Again, this reluctance to have a headache administratively for himself. And it's unlikely that the Covenanters will consent to see the city excluded from Protestant Ulster. So the initial plan was that maybe parliamentary franchises would be used, remembering that Belfast and Derry had a separate constituency from their parent county. But if that was given the option and every county had a plebiscite, or every city within the county that has a franchise had a plebiscite, the fear was that Derry and possibly West Belfast would be enclaves within an otherwise...
Okay, so Doherty won out.
Well, he did. He's the most senior ranking. And they look at these, particularly the Robinson scheme has a lot of merits to it. The difference in terms of the overall religious breakdown of the excluded area is about 2%. So despite all his machinations, Robinson really is splitting hairs. But some of his hairs he splits are very interesting. But they say, right, six counties it is. Now, there's still a debate over whether those two Catholic majority counties of Fermanagh and Tyrone will be left in and out. And that's what comes down to the Buckingham Palace Conference in 1914, where Carson and Redmond stand across the table from each other under the auspices of the king and say, I must have Fermanagh and Tyrone or die. But I quite see why you see the same.
When we fast forward, and we'll conclude this in a moment, we have the treaty.
Yes.
And we have the six counties which are excluded. Now, there was supposed to be, there was a border, and then it was supposed to be redrawn, never was redrawn to perhaps include people who might have been better off being south or being better off being north. Never happened. Was it Doherty's six counties then that survived into the treaty?
Well, that's the amazing thing about this period. Despite all these permutations, it's the Doherty scheme that is locked in by the British cabinet and with the Irish Civil Service in 1914. And they say, this is our best case scenario. When the 1916 Rising comes along, Redmond says, right, I need to get some form of Home Rule in. I'll concede on Fermanagh and Tyrone. And he just chips those two counties back into the Unionist permutation. And that's the, there's no further debate on the border apart from, as you know, the Boundary Commission in 1924 and 25 ultimately leaked to a Conservative newspaper, the Morning Post. The embarrassment of the Irish government means they just say, let's scrap the scheme, leave the border
and
as it there, is.
And that's why we are where we are today.
Yeah.
Dr. Conor Mulvihill, thank you very much.
Thanks, Pat.